Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly. Because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
It's been another crazy week in Fort Lauderdale. Our neighbors don't seem to care about the three-day notices we gave out, so we can't do much to help the landlord save this place. If he ever manages to get these tenants to leave, maybe we can get somebody new in there that will actually pay rent. I hope so. I want to stay here. Anyway, today we have the water working again, although I do have a leaky pipe. Things are improving. If landlord won't shell out the bucks to really get squatters out, I don't know how he can keep the place going. We're saving our rent money so we can move if we have to in 2 or 3 months. But hopefully he'll solve this and we'll be all set. We'll stay. But I think probably the bank's going to take over in a few months, tear the place down. Because that's what banks in the city like to do. Lots of places around here have gone that way. If they can force out the people who've lived here, 15, 20 years like we have, put up some fancy new places for yuppies, well, the city makes a lot more tax dollars. More people, density, and bigger incomes, fancy places. Well, you know, they care about that a lot more than they do about protecting the interests of poor downtrodden types like us, right? It's the American way. Crazy stuff in the rest of the world, too. Actually, a lot crazier. There's more radiation coming from Japan. They've admitted that three reactors actually did melt down. And there's a lot of finger pointing going on over there. As far as I can see, very little cleanup, but you can be sure the cover-up's going on. In a follow-up to the staged assassination of CIA operative Osama bin Laden, the Pakistani Taliban have supposedly claimed responsibility for some kind of an assault on the headquarters of a Naval Air Force base in Karachi. That killed some 13 officials, injured 14 others. But there's this general, Hamid Gul. He's a retired three-star general who headed the Inter Services Intelligence Agency. He says there's absolutely no doubt this was a U.S. operation. Oh, go figure. Would we attack something of our own? Oh, can't believe it, can you? Closer to home, e-spying goes on, hand in hand with cyber protectionism. The U.S. government continues its effort to run our internet as well as our lives in the real meat world. They know who we are, where we are, what we're doing. Well, I'm sure that surprises no one, but the Customs Department has started to shut down websites with the excuse of copyright violations. I'm pretty sure they'll be abusing this power just like most of the others that we grant. Meanwhile, defense and homeland insecurity are getting ready for their own interventions in the name of cybersecurity. For quite a few years, we've enjoyed a decent level of freedom of expression on the internet. I'm afraid it's headed for change. Or perhaps it was always an illusion. Finally, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon has announced there's a secret Patriot Act, actually secret interpretations of the already repressive and fascist legislation that keeps on getting renewed by the wishy-washy Dems. Will Wyden be the next Wellstone, falling prey to a staged accident? Or will they just buy him off somehow? Or did they already buy him off and he's a designated spokesman saying something controversial, so we won't notice something else? I don't know, but I always get suspicious about this stuff. Way back in 1808, Sir Walter Scott penned the immortal phrase, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." And although it's never been more true than it is now, the powers that be in America don't even bother to deceive most of the time. They think we're afraid of them and won't say anything about their big lies. You'll hear more about that theme later in the show, because Mike brings it up every week. We think it's incredibly important. And now I'm going to turn this over to my co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hi, Chuck. How you doing? This is a weather report from Duluth. It's warm and sunny today. I think it was in the 60s today. Well, tonight we've got Alice Charbonnier. She's in Baltimore. Chris Davenport is in Toronto. I think he's our first Canadian guest. Of course, we've got Lynn Osanek as a producer in Vancouver. So tonight we're coming to you from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Toronto, and Baltimore. And I guess the reason I bring up all those cities each week is I just think it's so cool to be able to do all this from just these little computers here sitting in the various different little basements and cubbyholes around the way. And remember to check out the Nuclear Resistor at nukeresistor.org. There you'll find news about Americans fighting against the United States military machine. You'll find addresses to write Americans in prison for fighting back against Barack Obama and George Bush and Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell. And remember, freedom is not free, especially on this weekend. If you're enjoying your freedom today, please thank a protester. And always remember, the Americans in the U.S. military fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and wherever else, they are not fighting for your freedom. They are fighting to secure profits for corporations, power for rich men and women. They are fighting for empire, murdering people across the globe. The real fighters for freedom are those we've mentioned who are listed in the Nuclear Resistor, those who are opposing the American military. And remember, the American military members stationed in some 700-plus bases around the globe are not there to secure your freedom. When the Soviet Union folded, those troops did not come home. Those bases were not dismantled because it was all a lie, because it had nothing to do with freedom, and it has everything to do with power and money. And remember, the tax dollars, the millions and billions of tax dollars we pay to the U.S. military are not for freedom. Those dollars are paying for our own oppression and the oppression of millions of people around the world. Those tax dollars should rather go towards health care, schools, roads, sidewalks, housing. And those who return to Iowa and Minnesota and Ohio and California and Florida, the ones who have been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, are not heroes. They are invaders, thugs, murderers, criminals. Any welcome home parade should proceed directly to the county courthouse. And, of course, you know about 9/11 and Osama bin Laden, how the American people, well, yeah. And all that ties back to 10 years ago. And I have to repeat that if planes had really crashed, or one plane had crashed into the Pentagon, we would have seen that footage 1 million times by now. The FBI took it from the many places around the Pentagon that have the footage of what really happened, and we will never see it because it does not show the official story. And Building 7 came down when a plane had not crashed into it. Controlled demolition in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. There is a hole in the ground that they say a plane crashed into and disintegrated, and we believe it, just like we believe that they just killed Osama bin Laden. The new American dream is about us becoming the sort of country we've always said that we are, and that has never been more important than it is today. And one of the things that's so important about becoming the sort of country we always said that we are is, I don't know, just learning. Just reading, just paying attention, keeping our eyes open. And this little quote from John Updike and his book, The Terrorist. The great city sprawls with people, some smartly dressed, many of them shabby, a few beautiful, but most not, all reduced by the towering structures around them to the size of insects, but scuttling, hurrying, intent in the milky morning sun upon some plan or scheme or hope. They are hugging to themselves their reason for living another day, each one of them impaled live upon the pin of consciousness, fixed upon self-advancement and self-preservation, that and only that. And I think that's so poignant. That points right to me, I know that. We will never get to be the kind of people we think we should be, the kind of country we think we should be, unless we get over that. Again, the few times that I was actually doing something, I'll go back in memory lane again here, I suppose, for just a little bit. The few times I was actually really working hard at fighting the United States, it was with total disregard for family, job, life, future, career, writing books. And I really think that might be where revolution happens, where countries get born. Just briefly, I crossed the line at Offutt Air Force Base. It was a federal, it's a federal misdemeanor is what it is. It's just trespass. But I spent some time in the county jail and Omaha, and was transferred by the U.S. Marshals to Chicago. There's a high rise federal prison in the downtown Chicago called MCC, Metropolitan Correctional Center. From there, I was transferred to Terre Haute, Indiana, and we were taken there on a prison bus and went to, it's a maximum security penitentiary is what it is. And it's just a shock. I don't know. We live in the United States our whole lives and we never really see it. We really don't. I mean, I was on a prison bus and I was, then being marched into Terre Haute, this big, huge, massive structure with handcuffs on. And I think I learned more in that little walk up the sidewalk to Terre Haute in that 15 or 20 minutes than I did in, 12 years of school and going to college. I mean, you learn where you're living at then. Well, I was 3 weeks there in transit unit. And then I was transferred to Leavenworth. Not really transferred to Leavenworth. We did an overnight in Leavenworth. And we ate breakfast in the morning in the chow hall. It's just a massive chow hall. It seemed to me like it was a gymnasium type. And I remember Leonard Peltier had breakfast and meals there for years. And I think it was in that chow hall that the Birdmen of Alcatraz stabbed a guard to get sent to Alcatraz. And I just, all that history comes rushing to you when you just think that you're really there. Then I was transferred to Latuna, which is a federal FCI, which is a medium security prison outside of El Paso. And I served my time there, and I was released from there. And I also did some other time, county time, and my last stint was in Council Bluffs, 6 months, Council Pottawatomie County Jail. I'm proud of those things. And I'm just saying that I think that's probably where nations get born and revolutions happen. Somebody gets health care, housing, school, the poor get fed, wars get stopped, and that's the zone you're in. It's not the zone of go to work and make it to the gym and pick up a bottle of wine on the way home just in time to watch the great Thursday night lineup. That's not it. And saving money and figure out how much money you can need to retire on and planning the tour of Europe and the grandkids' college education. That's just not the zone to be in if you want things to be changed. And I'm speaking to myself, not probably first of all. I wonder if we will ever have the courage to do what the people of Egypt have done and other people around the globe. And it's not because we don't have a reason. It's more in line with, have we got anything better to do today? The ones with the power desperately depend on us being afraid because, you know, we cannot say the truth. We think we can't. We are really so psyched out. Your chair at Thanksgiving dinner will suddenly be empty. Your relatives will send you to Siberia just with the roll of their eyes, and you fear that. We are there in the basement at the dusty exile's table, holding a greasy turkey leg in our greasy hands, getting grease all over our faces. So let us begin. Here we are. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The forces of evil, the large corporations, the U.S. military, Barack Obama, desperately want us to be afraid. They need us to be afraid. But we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
Coming to the town this summer, the Blue Angels, million-dollar killing machines you can sit in your lawn chair and see for 20 seconds, rather than having a decent school building for your children for 12 years. Coming to a municipal airport near you to celebrate the killing of brown and white and yellow and black people by the United States Air Force in Iraq, Vietnam, Japan, Germany, pretty much everywhere. We're blue and red and white, celebrating murder and theft and global power for America and making more angels every day, everywhere. Program is also brought to you by America, the worldwide leader. There's no more America. America was so last century. We're now America. America, the new and improved, faster, thinner, tougher, sexier. Made for the few, the proud, the brave, all that. Not for everybody. America, bow down to the throne.
I'd like to now welcome our first guest, Chris Davenport, coming to us from Toronto. Chris, I've been visiting with Chris by email for, seems like a long time now. Chris is the editor of the Activist magazine, and we'll find out what else he does. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm all right. Just got my garden planted and looking forward to the warmer weather coming.
Is it nice in Toronto?
Today it was. It's been raining a lot over the last couple of weeks, so it's been pretty hard to get the garden in because the ground's wet and you can't work it. And it's looking like it's going to rain again, actually. But it's at least pretty warm today.
That sounds great. I've never been anywhere, actually. I've never been to... Well, I was in Vancouver once, but my daughter was in Vancouver, was in Toronto for a church volunteer thing, and she says it's a really cool city. Is it about as big as New York City? Have I got that right, or have I got that wrong?
You mean like geographic space-wise, or?
I don't know.
So, well, by population, definitely not. I mean, Ontario, the whole province of Ontario, which is larger than Western Europe, has about, I think, 6 million people. So, or actually, no, I'm not sure about the population of Ontario, come to think of it. But Toronto and the GTA is about 4 million people, I'd say. So the greater
Toronto area. Well, I definitely need to get out of the house more often then, don't I? I need to get out and see things. Hey, Chris, tell me about how does America look like from your vantage point? What are we doing? What do you think about us from your viewpoint?
Well, it's a pretty scary time. I mean, you know, like you've got Utah Phillips, I think, put it well when he said that he just died a couple of years ago. I don't know if your listeners know Utah Phillips or not, but he's an anarchist folk singer who rode the trains, you know, many, many years ago. He wrote a lot of songs about trains. But anyway, he said that the Cold War, you know, blew a hole in the American consciousness that you could float the Queen Mary through. Like, he was talking about, like, how the Cold War had essentially erased, not just like, put down, but also erased the memory of the progressive movement, you know, like... And I've been thinking about that a lot, you know, and thinking like, yeah, he's really on the money, you know, like I'm the whole progressive era. It's like it never even happened, you know. Like I feel kind of like we're going back into the 19th century, you know, like when corruption and you know graft and all this sort of thing was like right out in the open. And so yeah, it's pretty scary to watch things unfolding from up here. But you know, we've got our own problems similar going on. We now have a majority conservative government, and our new Prime Minister Stephen Harper, he was held in contempt of Parliament, which I guess is our sort of equivalent of being impeached, and yet he was able to run for office and win. So could you imagine your president being impeached and then running for office and winning? I'm not even sure that they could actually
anything,
run for
yeah.
office. What's that?
I can imagine anything happening down here, yes. But no, go ahead.
So and now we've got this. Your listeners are probably familiar with the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Although I think the libertarians in the U.S. tend to nickname it the North American Union, even though it's not, you know, like the European Union where you have an above ground, you know, ratification of a treaty or anything like that. It's all happening in stealth. Now, in February. Prime Minister Harper and President Obama met and signed a new, I guess there's nothing signed, but they had discussions and they've now launched a new version of this Security and Prosperity Partnership, which, you know, relates to continental integration and the further integration of Canada and the United States on multiple levels, on the military level and on an economic level and harmonization of regulations, that's a big thing. So, you know, it's becoming like an extra governmental process that's being driven by corporations, surprise, surprise, for their benefit. And meanwhile, you know, the rest of us, well, we get to go about our business, but we don't get to have our precious democracy, you know. So yeah, we've got things going on here that aren't so great as well. So, you know, we feel for you.
You know, a few years ago, a couple of years ago, I was on a book tour, and I was trying to get into Canada. I was trying to cross the border, and I told the truth at the entryway. I said I had been to prison, and then I got put on the Group W bench, and then I got sent back to a special room, and I got interviewed, and I got deported from Canada without actually having been in. So I got kicked out of Canada, but it kind of gave me, I thought you guys were the nice guys. Huh? I thought you'd understand what I was all about, but I don't know. Things are changing. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, actually it's interesting you should mention that because under the, original SPP, there was a thing, that was, brought about called the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. And this is what, you know, this is the reason why Americans and Canadians now need passports to cross the border. You know, I mean, it used to be that, you know, we're best friends, you know. You don't need a passport when you're crossing into your neighbor's yard, you know. That's sort of the way the relationship had always been. But now, of course, there's this, you know, post-9/11 reality, you know, and the whole, there's a lot, you know, it's definitely a lot more rigid, you know, and getting more and more so that way. However, I did just cross into the United States a few weeks ago, and, you know, it was non-eventful, and everyone was friendly, and it just depends on the moment. You know, I crossed into the U.S. in October of 2001, and that was very tense. Very, very tense. In fact, you know, six green jumpsuited guys with Glocks surrounded my car, you know, and that was in Detroit, and I remember thinking, oh boy, this is going to be a long, long day, you know, but it turned out to not to be quite so bad. It was more like, you know, they just grilled you, asking you questions, and they're, you know, looking all nervous because it's after 9/11 and everything, but it was uneventful except for the, you know, having your car surrounded by guys with weapons isn't, you know, doesn't make you feel very nice.
Did you have rust and bumper stickers? Could that be why or not?
Did I have what?
Did you have rust and bumper stickers?
Oh, no rust. Bumper stickers then? Maybe, yeah. Probably had something. I don't put bumper stickers on my car now. I don't want to attract that kind of attention, you know?
That's what was holding my car together at the time was the bumper stickers.
Right,
and that's
exactly
how I got kicked out.
Bondo and bumper stickers, right?
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you about 9/11. I'm not sure what your particular take on it is, but do you think that people in Canada or Toronto or your circle, do they have any, do they believe in the 9/11 government story, do you think?
Most people that I talk to are either somewhat suspicious of it or else they just inside job, you know. Most of the people that I meet aren't very, like right now, for instance, the whole thing with Osama bin Laden, like everybody's laughing about it, you know. Like, why is this guy suddenly hauled out and, you know, and executed, you know, and you know, everybody seems to be questioning that too, so. But with 9/11, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of questions happening around 9/11, and there was a conference here, and I think it was the late spring or early summer of 2002. At the Ukrainian Center in Toronto, there was a big conference there, and you know, a lot of the at that point, like the whole 9/11 truth movement was just developing, and so it was quite interesting actually, because it seemed like in Toronto, for the most part, it was like a fringe element of the left that was asking the questions, and you know, maybe anarchists. Minded people or whatever, and then the people who were coming to the conference from the U.S. Was a mix of people, but of course there's a lot of libertarian types, right? It seems like things around conspiracies tend to sit in the libertarian camp in the U.S. and in Canada we have libertarians, but it's a bit of a, you know, the history is different and everything, and so it seems to me that, you know, that there was some interesting bridges being built, you know, because you had people who weren't in there that normally wouldn't be talking to each other are suddenly talking to each other. And I don't think that the, you know, intelligence apparatus and the people who are, you know, the people we constantly call them or they or whatever, I don't think that they like that too much, you know, the ruling class. I think that might have made them a bit nervous. I mean, you know, granted, it wasn't like it was a huge movement or anything, but just the idea of these people talking to each other can be kind of a scary thing. And now you look, and so when the SPP took off and these other sort of, you know, when people started talking about this post 9/11 reality and, you know, integration and erosion of civil liberties and new police powers and all these sorts of things, suddenly, you know, the Tea Party movement, this Tea Party Express with these, you know, paid coach buses and they're touring the country, all of a sudden it comes along and sucks all the energy away from that, you know. So now, you know, you don't have the civil libertarians talking with the people on the left. Granted, it seems to me that a good part of the left is totally out to lunch. Like, they've swallowed the Kool-Aid or taken the blue or red pill or whatever, however you want to put it. Like, they seem to believe the main narrative around 9/11, which I think, you know, the way the narrative was set up is like they knew that they always know they're going to have to let part of the truth out, limited hangouts or whatever you want to call it. And so they have a position in reserve. And so I think the position in reserve was, well, we knew this was going to happen and we just let it happen because we wanted to, you know, go into Iraq and Afghanistan. And now we're in Libya and Pakistan and God knows where else it's going to go, you know. But I mean, I think a lot of people in Canada are definitely questioning the whole narrative. What they actually believe is a, you know, a whole other matter. Me personally, I believe that it was an inside job. How exactly, you know, did that happen? Well, I gave up on that years ago. I can't, you know, I mean, there's still people talking about JFK, and that was in 1963, you know. So, I mean, I don't want to spend my whole life trying to figure out the minutiae of details, but certainly the story we're being presented with just does not add up.
Yeah, the big thing we fight down here is the mainstream media, and we also fight the leftist media. They're not really leftist. They're more of a centrist, and it's just so confusing when they don't tell the truth. And I'm glad that you got the Activist magazine, and we've got just about a minute more. Is there anything you'd like to talk about briefly about your publication or something you'd like to talk about in about another minute that we have, Chris?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that we're always looking for writers and researchers. We are an all-volunteer organization, so we don't pay, unfortunately, but I don't get paid either. That's how it goes, you know. We all have our jobs and our lives and everything. But if you have something that you want to write about, or if you're working on some research, if you want to get involved in research, you can reach me at editor@activistmagazine.com. As far as other things to talk about, oh, God, there's so many things, you know. I mean, one thing I think that's really important right now is a couple of things. The first thing is that Americans and Canadians outside of the, you know, the Beltway, and in Canada we have, you know, the Ottawa Hull capital region. People who are outside of the traditional, you know, world of politics in Canada and the United States need to start talking to each other, because I really like your whole project of the new American dream, you know, and the idea that, you know, a whole other world is possible and way and stuff like that. But so the first thing is that there's this urban and rural separation. I mean, urbanization over the last century has just, you know, it's done so much to, like, the whole way that we live. And it seems that the political process is very, you know, very good at pitting those two groups against each other. So we need to put a stop to that, you know. You know, like, for instance, like, the left and liberals or whatever like to make fun of the Tea Party people and you know, rednecks and whatever kind of other label you want to put on, groups of people. And, I mean, not that they don't deserve to be criticized, and the left deserves to be criticized too, but you have to be careful about how you do it. You gotta do things that build bridges and not create further separation. The other thing is that North America is in an energy crisis, and has been since probably just before 9/11, but certainly since 2003. And there's a lot of plans underway now to try and deal with that crisis. And I believe if they can't resolve that crisis, then we're going to be looking at some form of, you know, I don't want to use the word martial law or get into, you know, making predictions, but, you know, if the energy situation becomes so unpredictable that you start having, like, rolling brownouts and then blackouts and things like that, or the heat doesn't go on in people's homes, you know, order breaks down pretty quickly. And or could break down pretty quickly, you know. And I don't think that I think that the powers that be, they understand what they're dealing with, but they don't necessarily have a solution. But they're not going to, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about, you know, adult conversations, but they're not going to come out and tell us, oh, by the way, you know, the energy situation here is such that, you know, in a few years, if we can't secure, you know, natural gas supplies in other parts of the planet or whatever, that your lights aren't going to go on or the factory is going to shut down, you know. I mean, but this is a reality I think we're facing.
Chris, I'm going to have to stop there, but that sounds like a good place to set up the sequel to this interview. And we'd like to have you back again sometime.
Sure.
And thanks for coming on, Chris, and giving us the view from up north.
Oh, by the way, just before I go, if you want to see something funny about, you know, Canadians' view on Americans, go to, you can find it on YouTube, check out Rick Mercer's Talking to Americans. I would hope that some Americans somewhere would do the same thing, kind of prank to Canada, because I'm sure you'll find just as many uneducated or not so bright Canadians as well, you know.
I'll do that. I will do that. Thank you, Chris, and have a good night.
All right, I'll send you the link.
Thank you. Bye.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
New from Bantam Books this summer, look for Let Me Sleep, I'm Dead, Whispers from Osama. Didn't they tell you I worked for them so long and they turned on me? I had kidney failure and was treated in a U.S. hospital. On TV, that wasn't me. The Bush family, they were our friends. Whispers from Osama in all bookstores soon. And also, now for Storytime America, there is one Tooth Fairy and one Santa and one Easter Bunny. And there are 900 second in command of something called Al-Qaeda, and we kill him every day that we need to cover up something else we are doing. And Al-Qaeda is big and bad, and America is big and strong. Good night. Sleep tight. And now for your most popular tweet of the day. Having a good time living in America. As long as I have a job and my family is happy, and I have a house and some food and a place to work out, and maybe I can lose some weight this summer, then really who cares if the world burns?
Our guest tonight is Alice Charbonnier, longtime editor and columnist for the Baltimore Chronicle. The Chronicle has been an independent alternative to the big papers in Baltimore since 1973. I especially like the description by the Baltimore City paper in 2001, when they were in the process of naming Alice the best columnist of the year. They called the Baltimore Chronicle Mobtown's stealth alternative newspaper. Quite a description there. Alice studied to be a lawyer, but found her temperament was better suited to journalism. The issues and the way people write about them gets her dander up. She just has to respond. She's also heavily involved with the American Friends Service Committee and even teaches graphic arts at night. I welcome multifaceted personality Alice Charbonnier to the New American Dream radio show.
Well, hello. This is Alice.
Hello, Alice. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'd like to know how the business of journalism has changed since you started out back in the 70s or so.
Well, I think that the big change started in about 1980. We noticed it particularly, and I have a name for it that I don't think other people use, but I use. It's called demon graphics. The change really started when it became possible through the use of computerization of statistics from the Census Bureau to know exactly who lived in what parts of cities, for example. And that meant that you could target your audience. And advertisers began to think, hey, I can get more bang for my buck because I can choose not to have my ad run in a particular publication that might not be reaching a large percentage of people who might afford my product or want it. And so they could, by targeting, they actually could cut out a lot of the media sources that might have been available then. And in Baltimore City, for example, we used to have the Baltimore News American, which was a 200-year-old daily newspaper, and it couldn't find a buyer. It was a Hearst paper, and it couldn't find a buyer, but it had a property by the Baltimore Harbor, and it sold the property for more money than it could have gotten had it been able to sell itself, but no one would buy them anyway. Why not? Because even though they had an alleged 100,000 circulation paid, that didn't mean anything to advertisers because they were perceived as and now proved to be serving people who were blue-collar and therefore not as able to support advertisers. Because even then, it was really clear that newspapers were ad-driven, just like TV and radio. Was that a long sentence?
No, that was good. Would you say that the writing has started to target the demographic or demon graphic? I love it with the N. has the writing changed over this time and targeted audiences?
Well, yeah, I think that there one of the trends, which I think is really absurd, but it's definitely something that is being taught in our journalism schools. It's a new, exciting trend of news writing. It's called creative nonfiction. And we had interns. We always had a lot of interns, and we'd get them from the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of Maryland, for example. And they would want to write a formula type of approach to a news story where, and if I tell readers what it is, or listeners, they'll recognize it right away. You have a news story. It starts out with a hook, a lead that makes you think, oh, this is interesting. And then the very next thing will be a color quote. That's what they call it, a quote that will kind of embody what this is about. And it doesn't really matter whether they repeat it in the next paragraph, because they basically will restate that in the third paragraph, which is called the nut graph, which is supposedly going to lay out the who, what, when, where, how, why, and how much, except that they've also been taught to drag it a little longer out because otherwise people might not continue to read. And so that explains why when you start reading a news story on the front page of a newspaper, and it might be, say, someone in your neighborhood is murdered, but you'll have to go to the continued page to find out who it is. Because the idea is people will not continue to read to a jump, a continued part of a story, unless there's some compelling reason. Not giving the information might be that reason. Sounds kind of crazy, but instead of
it does sound crazy, but I certainly have observed that. And not only in newspapers. People do it with websites. It's done... television news is terrible that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They'll feed you something all day long, but they just tease you. They don't really tell you the story.
Yeah, because it's filler. You know, you don't have to work as hard if you don't have to give as many stories, right? So if you could write a story that gives all the facts in about six paragraphs, then you're going to need to have a whole lot more stories, right? So therefore, milk the story. Like right now, we have the Baltimore Sun, which is our lone surviving daily. I didn't finish telling about how we lost the Evening Sun. After the News American folded, then the Evening Sun folded. And so we only have morning dailies pretty much all through the country. And the Baltimore Sun is a shadow of its former self. It's pathetic. I mean, hardly even, if it weren't for the obituaries, a lot of people wouldn't get it, because that's about the only real news value it has. But they'll take a story, just a simple little story, and they will plump that thing, you know, like give you two whole pages of copy about something inconsequential. And that way they don't have to have a whole lot of reporters working, because they can all concentrate on one simple-minded story. And it's a great formula for not spending money. You can cut half of your writing staff if you have that approach.
Well, I don't think it's going to be much of a formula for longevity, but then again, newspapers don't... I'm not sure newspapers are really going to continue being around for too long.
They're kind of cutting off their noses. They're not showing what their special thing is that they could offer, which would be actual facts without spin.
Yes.
If we could have that, I think they could survive. But they seem to want to compete.
But,
they seem to think that they have to be like Twitter or Facebook or something like that. And really, they don't. If they could only just tell us the facts, we would all be better off. But they don't. I actually thought of one particular area of non-reporting that's occurred in this country that is shocking and very damaging. And that is about the fact that we spend in America per capita about double what other developed countries spend for health care. Double. And yet we don't get as good a result, right? Now you have to wonder, why isn't this widely known? Instead, you have people say, oh, well, we're the best country on earth. We have the best this. We have the best that. And they don't really understand that we are not competitive with other countries because we don't have a universal health care system or an efficient private health care system. We are spending 16% of our gross domestic product on health care in this country, which is nuts. And the next closest one is France at 11%, and their health care is not only the best in the world, but it's better than just about any other. You know, and this is not widely known, and it's not discussed. We seem only, I think there's some kind of a syndrome that goes on in the American mind that we are the best, so we mustn't question it, instead of thinking, hey, maybe we're not the best, maybe we could be better, but instead we're not given that information. It's not put in front of us. When you hear stories about the healthcare situation or Medicare or Medicaid, you don't really see the picture, the whole picture, and that is that we're screwing up. We're not doing the job the way we should.
A lot of people, I think, tend to equate the amount of money you spend with the quality of service you get. And so it they say, oh, well, we're spending more than anybody else. That makes us better.
And yeah, I know. That's crazy, isn't it?
Not the way it is. But
especially when it's not
that's
working.
That's the mindset.
Yeah, and in doing a little research on this point, in case I had a chance to discuss it, I had noticed when a friend of ours was in a nursing home, he was elderly, that there were a lot of inner-city adolescent guys in wheelchairs in this facility, which was a nursing care facility. Well, it turns out 20%, this might explain some of our expenditures, which we also didn't hear about, 20% of those who are receiving long-term care, mostly through Medicaid, are under age 65. They're age 18 to 64. Excuse me, 40%. 40% of them are younger than age 64. It's not old people. It's people who are unable to function on their own. If you have these drive-by shootings and the person doesn't die, well, they might end up in a nursing home at public expense for the rest of their lives. We just don't talk about these things. But that's one of the things that's driving our costs.
That's some frightening statistics there.
Yeah. Oh. And then let's see. Okay, here's another good one for you. What percent of long-term care money or long-term care money spent on by all sources, what percent is paid for by Medicaid? Medicaid is those people who don't have assets, okay? So all the spending for long-term care for everybody in America, how much of that is coming from Medicaid?
I have no clue.
49%.
Really?
That's really astonishing. Which just goes
now, of course,
to
there
we
are
working
those
on
who
prevention.
Would say that that
we
means
aren't working on creating jobs so people can get their insurance.
We
there's so much we could be doing.
Medicaid.
But instead, Medicaid, without our really realizing it, is our backstop, but it's draining us. And by draining us, it might not be there for those who really need it later. You know, I mean, when you look at how many of the cases of Medicaid, the long-term care cases, are people under age 64. It's unbelievable. And, of course, on our health care costs, apparently that doesn't include the cost of providing care in our prisons. And we have more people per capita in prisons than anybody else.
Yes,
if you added that in, imagine how much higher it would look.
Well, I wonder how we can change that.
Well, the only way you can change something is if people know it needs to be changed. And as long as people are not informed and don't inform themselves about this information, which is available, and if somebody went to BaltimoreChronicle.com, there's a link that will get you to the OECD website, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and they track all the economic indicators of all the so-called developed nations to show kind of benchmarks of how we're doing. You know, also another thing is our education costs. They also cover that. Most people in America don't know that if you go to university in France, Germany, England, Finland, Norway, just about any of the other developed countries, if you qualify to go to university, you get to go and the tuition is free. You might have some fees, you might have to get some lodging, but they will subsidize your lodging if necessary. But you're pretty much guaranteed you will be able to afford your education and you will not be encumbered by debt. And we don't even know that that's going on elsewhere. It's people here countenance that kids graduate from college with debts of $20,000, $30,000. From graduate school, they might go up to $100,000, $150,000, and they're stuck. And they can't really contribute to the economy in general until they get that paid off. And that doesn't happen in other competing countries.
Of course,
but
I think part
know.
Of the motivation behind that is that the people making those loans are making an incredible amount of money from it.
Oh, yeah, especially
so
the ones that are guaranteed by the federal government.
They get essentially a slave class, practically, of highly skilled individuals.
Yeah, yeah, who will not then be able to afford to do something that might be socially responsible or maybe go and serve underserved populations. Unless there's some incentive to do that, they can't afford to take a lesser paying position or take a chance on something or try to start their own business and take that risk. They can't do that. And even if they could start their own business, they really can't afford to do that on a number of planes, one of them being health insurance. If you don't have affordable health insurance that you can obtain on your own, you cannot take the risk of trying to start your own business. And businesses don't want to hire you because it'll just add to their load of insurance. You know, it's just an extra cost that isn't the extra cost in these other countries.
Well, you've certainly opened my eyes to some things here. And I encourage our listeners to visit the Chronicle website. What was the URL again?
BaltimoreChronicle.com.
Okay.
Or they could go to the OECD website. That's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Okay. Well, I certainly encourage people to visit that. I visited the Chronicle site myself and found a number of fascinating stories. I think I could have spent the whole day surfing with that as a starting point.
Well, thank you.
I didn't have the time, but it's a nice place. So you do good work there.
Well, you know, it's kind of like having your finger in the dike. Who's going to do it if you don't? And I guess you guys feel like that at your radio show, too, sometimes.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Frequently.
I understand.
That's what we all have to do is just, you know, keep on plugging away and in our own ways. Alice, is there anything you'd like to say in the way of any final thing you'd like to shout out to our listeners because we're out of time?
Just read everything you can get your hands on and question everything.
That sounds like great advice to me.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Alice Cherbonnier, for appearing on a New American Dream radio show. This message brought to you by the Boogeyman. The United States of America has a huge military, hundreds of bases around the world. The people were told for 50 years were needed exclusively to counter one enemy, communism. But now, there aren't any communists anymore. The CIA needed to be huge to counter the KGB, but there isn't any KGB anymore. The FBI needed to be huge because the Reds were everywhere, even under our beds. But there weren't any Reds anymore. Aren't any Reds anymore. So, we don't need the military and bases and CIA and FBI, right? Yeah, well, no. But there are terrorists everywhere. They attacked us on 9/11. They're big bees from Mexico, and so there you go. They still need almost all the money. Have a nice day. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level and believe what we tell you.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. There have been more burials at sea. Jim, the pharmacist, buried at sea. Joe, the high school janitor, buried at sea. Cecilia, the McDonald's manager, buried at sea. And Frank, the guy who was at all the high school sports events for years and years, buried at sea. And we continue, as we have for the past, 10 years, to do our part to contribute to Homeland Security. We have lookouts 24/7, 365 on the water tower looking for terrorists. We also have deputized citizens going undercover looking for terrorists on camera at the TV station, bridge inspectors, and also a scarecrow. And now that Osama bin Laden has been killed, their stories can be told, because probably the war on terror will end, just like in the early 90s when the Soviet Union folded and we put all that money from military weapons into healthcare, schools and roads, and the peace dividend. Now we'll probably bring all the troops home and cut defense spending down to almost zero and close the military bases overseas, because what other reason would they be there for? And then we'll spend the money on fixing sidewalks and tuck-pointing the old schools and letting people get health care when they need it. And so now, finally, for the stories from the files of the Patriots who have kept us free over this past decade, and a big thank you and welcome home.
Is this heaven? It is when you're a big star. Channel 9 live at 5:05. Coming to you now. It's me, dude, right in front of you on the TV. Move your foot. Hey, how's it going? What I love is how, as a member of the Homeland Terror Squad, I get to wear all these hats. Water tower spotter. Undercover sheep judge. And now I get to be a member of the local news team.
I don't want a sheep judge.
My mother, Yahweh bless her dark terroristic little soul, would not have believed this had she survived the interrogation. I'm an on-air talent. So I get to wear this terror orange suit, of course, and all these nifty buttons. Look out. The clouds are falling. Stop, drop, and roll. Just say no to terror. Journalistic army of one. I'm embedded and I like it. And now, you know, for the news. If it, if it lasts longer than 4 hours, consult a physician, veterinarian, or your local Shrine Circus representative. Okay, I'm back. Commercial's on now. We got some time. Today we got a visit in the studio, some big shots from the Homeland Broadcasting Company. Herr Brokaw, Herr Rather, someone carrying along a big color cardboard photo of Herr Jennings. They're on the tour. They walked through, shook some hands, handed out buttons and toothbrushes. These guys have the whitest teeth. I'm really going to start brushing from now on. Oh, just a minute. More news. Are your children at risk from terror, from Al-Qaeda, from Mexicans? Any Salvadorans you don't know about on your school board? Well, you might need a deck of good old boy sports trivia cards. Whip out one of these, pop the question to the suspected terror type. Who the F was Bobby Richardson? Who the F was Tom Trish? Who the F was Cleet Boyer? If they don't know right quick, they're not from around here, are they? Blow your orange terror whisko, have that sumbitch hauled off the county concentration camp. You can never be too safe, have too much money, or be too happy. We're Good Old Boy, new 70s disco edition, now available. Okay, I just have to do the news. Now they'll run another commercial. Anyway, you wouldn't think much would go on at one of these local stations, but there's plenty. We're on the front lines of terror. There's signs all over the hallways and in the dressing rooms that remind us. You're like those old Uncle Sam recruiting posters. Okay, we're back. Thank you, Jennifer, for that on-site weather update. You're kind of sweating. Take paradise and put up a parking lot. Just kidding. A little global warming humor. Jenny? Huh. We seem to have lost our live remote for now. Now, on the local scene, what you need is an orange terror tinfoil hat. Get one at your local newspaper or radio station. If you stop by during Terror Month, you might get one autographed by Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, or one of your local television anchors. Hey, I get a break now till the 10 o'clock show, but it won't be much of one. Catch a burger on the road, then it's down to shoot footage of the pit bulls and Rottweilers versus 9/11 truthers and evolutionists. That's in the Coliseum. Might lead if I can get some good bite shots. Well, that's about it. That's what we do. We're Channel 9 News, and we keep an eye on the world, so you don't have to. Go about your day. I got this.
Hello, I mean ahoy, it's me out here in the water in the rowboat, me and Carl. We got this one oar in the water. We dropped the other one. One should do it. Homeland Bridge inspectors reporting for duty, sir, at your service. What we see here, and our report will show this when we find the pen, is that this bridge failed after a truckload of money headed for the military caused it to collapse. Wait just a moment, please. It's my beeper. Yes, yes, uh-huh, I know. Dropped it. Not me, Carl. Yes, yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. Okay, fine, then. You smell good today, sir, ma'am. Of course, not through the phone. Impossible. Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, I'm back. Seems we now have reports of the same types of trucks running into schools in Cleveland and Detroit and Oakland as well, and similar bridges in New York and Charlotte and Denver have also apparently crashed and burned. Oh, boy. Reports are now coming in about substandard housing in every major city in the United States, mostly black neighborhoods, it seems, that have somehow been run straight through by large trucks full of cash and large denominations headed for military operations all over the country as well as overseas. Well, what we're going to do here is to keep rowing, see what we can see, report back, monitor the beeper. That's kind of what we do. When we get to wear these orange terror vests, it's all pretty cool. It's amazing how our president and vice president have this whole thing under control, the different ins and outs, scenarios, plans, all those beepers. Hey, you have a good day, you old American you. Yeah, just a minute, another beeper call. Just wait. It seems that we're going to be dragging for our other oar, and either me or Carl will need to put on the wetsuit and goggles and deploy to the bottom. Carl shaking his head. Don't you worry about a thing. Go about your day. I got this.
Hey, over here. How's it going? I'm the Scarecrow. You didn't see me? Really? Cool. I'm on double secret terrorist duty, securing the homeland. Actually, to secure my homeland, I'd have to split myself into force and go back to Europe. But I think this is somebody else's homeland. Oh, well, always willing to chip in and do my part. I'm also a member of Sertoma, Kiwanis, and the Noon Rotary. I love meetings. I'm a people person. Anywho, hot enough for you? What do you think? Is this the end of our American fascism period or just the beginning? You think we'll have elections in 2012? Or will Obama just declare this the American century of unlimited hope and change? Or do you think, like, Wingnut Willie or Wacko Wanda, they might do another 9-11, put us on super-secret double probation for our own good? That's the question of the day, the week, the year, right? I don't know. I'm just here to do my duty, protect and serve and eat pizza. That'd be my motto, I've decided. Anyone ever ask what my motto is? I swear that's what it is. I was in the Mount Earl Post Office yesterday. Rush Limbaugh is always on in there loud. I wonder if anyone listens or if it's just on for noise, like having Paul Harvey on over noon in the cafe so nobody really has to talk to each other. I heard, though, Limbaugh was talking about illegals and how they were dangerous and terror-type individuals. That's why I'm wearing this white hood and sheet out here in the garden. I want us to be free. I want it so bad. My dreams are all about baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. I swear they are. I want our kids to be free to grow up and join the National Guard and go kill those who need to be killed. Then have a freedom to come back and worship in the church of their choice and work at Pizza World. I'll stand here all day until my arms get pretty tired. Make sure that happens. Love the old fatherland, motherland, Disneyland. Really do. Here comes these GD aliens. They just stare. That bugs me. I think they know it does. They've got a round ship and blinking lights. I think I've seen them around here before. They all look about the same to me. Shoot! Shoot! Go on. Scat! Get! Okay, well, I might be here a while. They don't seem to speak English. Yeah, like I'm surprised. Go about your day. I got this.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are are about average.
We'd like to thank once again the Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring our show. We also like to thank World News Trust for hosting our radio show website and the book's websites. We hope you'll stop by again, same time, same place, next week. And for right now, stay tuned for Black Op Radio, coming up next. Thank you, and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.